Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code SPOTIFY for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Welcome to this edition of the Completely Unnecessary Podcast for Tuesday, September 12th, 2017, alongside Ian Ferguson.
Hi.
I'm Pat Contra. We have a fun-filled show for you, including that Street Fighter II Special Edition re-release, an update. Robert Stack going to give you an update on the SNES Classic pre-orders and NES Classic. Maybe returning. PewDiePie in trouble again. L.A. Noire coming to Nintendo Switch. Anniversaries abound for the Atari 2600 and the Mario Kart. Q&A and more.
Holy shit, the best episode of the not-so-common podcast would be if you could interview Robert Stack. Sadly, he's dead.
So from Beyond the Grave?
Yeah. Oh, my God, from Beyond the Grave. Have Frank channel Robert Stack.
You can ask him, you know, how diverse was his trench coat wardrobe. You know,
talked to him about Airplane.
Airplane's fantastic.
I mean, he was in Airplane. He was he played the generic handsome man in movies in the 60s, 70s.
So not too familiar with him. I guess he was sort of like what Leslie Nielsen used to be the generic handsome man before Leslie Nielsen got into the comedic act in the 80s.
Yeah. I know quite a bit about Robert Stack. He was a nice guy.
Nice guy? You meet him?
I mean, from what I've read.
Ian, did we have fun in Parsippany, New Jersey at a video game con?
You know, I did. I had a lot of fun at a video game con. It kind of snuck up on me, and I wasn't exactly ready for it, but I had a great time. The people in charge were super nice, and I said it on Twitter, and we said it to them in person, but I felt like they ran a real tight ship for their convention, and I think they have pretty good things ahead of them for their convention.
I didn't feel it as much as I did last year when I went back because it's my home state, and I actually felt a weird little kinship with the people and the area more so than I did last year. I'm not sure why. Like, these are my people here. Well, here in the accents, and then you know, New York, New Jersey is close related. Here in the heavy New York accent, I have a slight East Coast accent, but. I felt a bond that I didn't feel before around them. I can't explain why.
That's kind of my thing, too. And the thing is, I'm not from Jersey, but I think it's just because it's that tri-state
area,
you know, being from, you know, Buffalo, New York and things. I don't share everything that people from Jersey do, but it was good to be among the East Coast people again. No nonsense, no bullshit.
A little more
people.
Straightforward, a little more aggressive, but you know
the handshakes were harder,
busting balls a little bit more.
The hugs were tougher. I mean, yeah, exactly. Yeah. It was a really good time.
Plus the weather was the perfect fall weather.
I loved the weather.
So I mean, like when I went last year, I think it was a little hotter. But this was like 60 degrees, windy, the trees all blowing around you. We don't have that out here.
It was so nice.
So I missed that. Obviously, there was a diner about 400 feet, a quarter mile from the convention that me and Norm went to Sunday morning. So Norm got his first taste of Taylor ham or pork roll. I like the generic pork roll.
I like the term pork roll a lot.
And so we both got like an omelet and at the diner. And diners are great in New Jersey just because they're open 24 hours.
On the East Coast in general.
But it's good quality, cheap breakfast. So you can get a really good breakfast for like $5.
I was going to say, $5 gets you potatoes, three eggs, usually a side of the meat of your choice.
Toast.
Coffee, toast.
Home fries, you know. And so we both got that, basically, an omelet. Then we said, you know what, fuck it. We said, fuck it. We're going to get the traditional New Jersey diner, which is pork roll, egg and cheese sandwich. We split one on top of our breakfast. because it was the same price almost as getting a side of pork roll. We said, fuck it. The whole experience, Norm. We're both going to just bust a gut after this. But it was great. It was just the whole feeling. And then, of course, we made it to... Well, first we went to with... We met John and Mike from CFOs Saturday night. We went to Sushi Village.
They kept me. I didn't make it to Friendly's that night.
You didn't. Biggest mistake of your weekend.
Yeah,
but
it was.
We had fun. It was sort of cool having like 12 to 14 people at the table. Chris from Windy City Gaming. We had my friend from college was there. We had Adam and Nina, Square Painter. We had Norm, the gaming historian, there. I'm probably missing a few, at least. There was a ton.
We had the CFOs guys. We had Gilly. We had Antoinette and
my convention wife. So it was and a cute rock with a dog sitting under the table. Cutest dog ever. So if I don't know. I felt good that night. I actually even did a little mini toast, which was weird, kind of out of character.
Yeah, that was very out of character. Both Norm and I looked up and we were like, did Pat sneak a drink in?
I don't know. I was feeling good. Maybe it was I was high on all you can eat a la carte sushi, which was good. But then afterwards, I made it to Friendly's, Friendly's, Friendly's in the summertime, and I got the peanut butter cup sundae because that's like the default.
It's so good.
It's ridiculous. I'm not sure how I got the large back in Syracuse and ate half it when the medium or small was just fine. That 1,000 calories, that's all you need to be good. But like I said, I had a great time there. Did I pick up a manual? I picked up a Tetris, Tetris manual, because I think I only have it for the complete in box, but I don't have a loose card yet, so I'm crazy like that.
I'm still finding cheap Game Boy games in my my messenger bag. All I picked up was
You were on a spree. Whenever I saw you, you were buying something.
Yeah,
week.
But
you
it was
bought, you bought more than me, I think, this past weekend.
It was all cheap. It was all cheap. I got a really nice game from Carlson of Mad Gear. He gave me a really good deal on a nice PC Engine shooter. But other than that, I basically just bought cheap Game Boy games that looked interesting to me. But that was the thing. At like $5 a piece, you lose track of how many you're buying.
Oh,
so
sure.
So I keep finding them in various pockets.
I should have bought the big Game Boy game I should have gotten, Nora, was Amazing Tater, which I don't have.
And that's a fun game.
Well, it's rare as hell.
Yeah, it is.
And it was a good deal. I think it was like under 200, which I think is a good deal if you get it under 200. I think it was like 180 US. I think it goes for 200 or more.
I just wanted to play it.
You can get a flash card. But I mean, I passed on that and I regretted that at the time. And that's one that I definitely want to pick up.
That's the sequel to Quirk, isn't it?
Is that? I don't know.
I think it might be.
I think it's
and
cute.
I just
think it's cute, but the biggest story from the weekend came the night of Thursday before we left.
Oh jeez.
So
there's a man outside and he has a knife.
Thanks for ruining the surprise of the story.
Well, there is no man outside and he had no knife.
I wish it was. It's an hour away from you getting your lift and picking me up before I go to the airport, and I was mostly packed. So, you know, I like to get a fresh shower before I go to the airport. I like to be a little moist when I go through security. Give those guys something to feel when they're patting me down. Anyway, so we live in a pretty safe area. It's pretty damn safe where we live. Not a lot of crime. Some grifters, some things like that every once in a while, but for the most part, it's safe. Nothing really happens. So I decided to take a shower. And, I usually lock my door. I usually like keeping the screen door open and you lock that. It's a heavy screen. You can't break through. It's metal. And locking that. So you get a nice breeze through here. So I thought it was locked because I lock it 99% of the time. I go to take a shower. And I'm showering in the bathroom over there. And, you know, I'm soaping up. I've already covered my twig and berries. That's good. Going to the shampoo, my hair. You know, I think I was all soaped up, but I basically was soaping my big mop, even though I got to cut it's a big mop. I was basically in the Ferris Bueller mode where like it was all like soaped up, like almost standing straight up. I hear a soft voice. Hey, Tom, are you in here? And when you're a human being, you usually distinguish between voices that come from humans, voices that come from like TVs or radios, or if it's in the proximity or in the distance. And something in my head said that, okay, this is not outside my window, and this is not from a TV, and I think my TV might have been on, but I wasn't positive. I quickly in my head, you don't realize it, then you realize this voice is probably from 15 feet away from me, at most. So, but usually you're not expecting to hear that, because I knew it wasn't like
wasn't you, wasn't my girlfriend's voice. I recognize that. And I'm not sure who else would be.
And your name's not Tom.
Yeah, but that was like, ah, maybe it was someone outside. Because sometimes, you know, people are outside, sure. You know, whatever, at the pool or whatever. So you don't want to think something's up. It's almost like when you're sleeping and you hear someone hitting something outside your door. You want to like almost ignore, like, oh, okay, it'll go away. So I look, and then I just see standing. I'm in the shower with, you know, one of those glass doors. I look in the doorway, and there's a woman standing there. Woman I don't know. Probably early to mid-30s. Short, bleach blonde hair. You know, she looked okay. She wasn't that disheveled at the time. Standing, looking at me.
At the time?
In my bathroom, about 7 feet away from me. And saying, Tom, are you Tom? So, Tom is the name of my neighbor upstairs. Okay? So, I'm like, okay, this is good and bad. It's bad that there's this random woman. And first of all, this would be the fantasy usually of any man. In the shower, woman comes in. It's like, oh, my God, this is a penthouse letter. This is a letter to the penthouse forms. No. It's freaked out.
That's the fantasy of no one.
It would be if this was a normal situation, and plus if she was like a, you know, penthouse model. But she wasn't bad looking, though. But something was wrong. She was either drunk or strung out. She didn't look dangerous. That's the first thing I noticed. Like, she didn't look dangerous. I looked at her hands. She wasn't holding anything. She didn't have any random NES games from my collection. So I was like, okay. So I'm tilted out so she doesn't see everything. Like, can I help you? She's like, is Tom here? I'm like, no, this, upstairs. This is not him. She started mumbling stuff more. I have to see him. I have to see him. Upstairs. So now, okay, she's not leaving. This is like 15 seconds. So I have a choice. I could hope she leaves or get aggressive and like start like chasing her out or walking out. But then she would see me in my glory soaped up everywhere. So that went through my head. So what I decided was saying, you got to get out now. Like, you got to get out now. Again, like, stuck in the door. And I'm almost, like, trying to aggressively, like, move to be like, you got to get out. But then she see everything, and I felt weird about that. Not as weird as I thought I would feel, but it would have been weird. Like, I would have got over it if I had to chase her out naked, but that would be really weird. Be a better story.
What would have probably been best is to just throw the door open all the way. Put your hands on your hips and get a good gyrate on and be like, you have to leave now.
Well, that's the thing, though. It's like if I was single, then there might be a potential other element to the story where you
no,
could do that.
That's not a sexual advance.
That's an aggressive thing? Okay.
That's an aggressive thing. You just gyrate and that like scares rude? People. Yeah, exactly.
Unless she likes what she saw. Who knows? But at the time,
a stern enough look, I think it's an aggressive motion.
But being that there was a somewhat danger level here, I don't think I could have had blood flow there if I wanted to, because I was afraid this person might do something weird or bad. So
you're misinterpreting me.
I know. So, but she finally leaves, and so I don't have my cell phone near me to call the police, right? Mm-hmm. So I figure, all right. I hear the door close in the front. She slammed the door. The door I should have fucking locked that I usually lock. Damn it, the one time. Slams the door. And I'm all soaked up. I finish showering. I have to. Like, plus, I'm going to get picked up in, like, literally a half hour. Mm-hmm. I got to do this. I can't, like, call the police, wait for a policeman to come and say there was some unlawful entry with some either spazzed out, drugged up, and or drunk woman. So
probably crystal meth. Just think.
Could have been.
The area.
Okay.
The
so
area.
I go, I dress, I go upstairs to my neighbor, knock on the door, not there. So 10 minutes before you're going to pick me up, their family comes back, and it's first the wife and the kid. And so it says, I don't know what the situation with this woman. I don't know if she's a jilted lover. I don't know if there's some connection. The guy was still down in the garage. So I go and I talk to Tom. By the way, Tom's not the real name, but to protect the innocent and or me. I go, all right, don't want you to freak out, but a woman came into my place asking for you while I was in the shower. He's like, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God, I don't know. I was like, okay. I described the woman. I said she was like 30 to 35, about 5'4", short bleach blonde hair. Like, she didn't look that disheveled. She actually didn't. Do you know someone who fits that description? I'm playing cop. And he's told me, no, I have no idea who that is. So I had no reason to not believe him. So that freaked me out even more, because now there's a woman looking for this guy with his wife and kid there. And she can come back at any time. But I had to tell him. So that was my adventure before AVGC. Random ass woman walking in my bathroom while I'm all soaped up and ready for action. So, there you have it. That's my fun story. Go watch Video Game Years on Amazon Prime. You won't see me soaped up, but you'll see me and Ian having fun talking about the 5200, the video game crash of 1983, and more. And you know, and maybe that N-Tech Selecta game. That was a funny segment. So anyway.
Okay.
So, Ian, at a video game con, we did a panel. We like doing these panels a lot, and we discussed two things. So here's where I'm going to cut in where we discuss, because this happened right after the last podcast, I Am 8-Bit Special Edition re-release, the 30th anniversary, even though it isn't the 30th anniversary, of Street Fighter 2 on Super Nintendo. So watch that now.
Woo!
All right, Ian, this was breaking news right after the last podcast.
Yeah, breaking.
Recorded. And they're already sold out. We're talking Street Fighter 2, the 30th anniversary edition, SNES cartridge release from I Am 8-Bit. Kind of surprising. Kind of came out of nowhere like an RKO of nostalgia.
Yeah. So I Am 8-Bit is a company that does a lot of vinyl releases of soundtracks for video games. They've done No Man's Sky. They've done Streets of Rage, they've done Streets of Rage 2, they've done Outrun, they've done Shenmue, they've done a bunch of them. So now it looks like they are taking over something that a lot of people have thought about for a while, which is companies re-releasing classic games on the consoles they were originally released on.
Sure, there's nothing stopping the copyright holder from doing that. All the technology is no longer patented. They don't need permission of the people that own the console to do it. It's like potentially, it's like a homebrew, but it's a game that existed already. In essence, you know, it's a corporate brew. It's a corporate brew. So what
a
was
a macro brew?
A macro brew, yeah,
like beer.
Okay. So this is Street Fighter 2, 30th anniversary edition, limited edition of 5500.
Rookie Mark McGuire.
It sold out in about, I want to say, 6 or 7 days. It didn't sell out immediately. Some people were surprised about that. I wasn't surprised. We'll get into why though. Brand new playable SNES cartridge asterisk. We'll get to that. Tri-fold box with foil, gloss, and embossments. Premium instruction booklet. Retro hacking surprises. And then limit 2 per customer. Trying to keep those dirty scalpers at bay. So the
yeah, at 2.
One of the biggest, I guess, points about this is that they sort of made it a semi-chase, where 4,500 of these were the standard opaque Ryu headband red color cartridge, and 1,000 are glow-in-the-dark Blanca green. So you basically have a 1 in 5 chance, roughly, 20% chance. 20-25% chance of getting the Ian, what are you making a movement about?
Because I fucking hate Chase.
Okay, what's wrong with this? You don't like the fact that they did that at all? All
right, as a record collector, there are a certain amount of companies that do Chase colors.
Okay.
And it's fucking annoying. You should get the limited edition color choice that you want if you are quick on pre-ordering. You should be able to pre-order the cartridge and get a choice of, do I want the red or the more limited whatever?
Limited.
Yeah. Limited. Yeah. Limited. It sounds like you're taking a shit. Anyways.
Does your asshole talk to you and say limited?
Yeah, it does.
Okay.
Limited edition 4 on the Bristol scale.
Go on, you
son of a bitch. Anyways, I don't like Chase for colors. It drives me insane.
Okay.
I feel like you should have been able to order the cartridge up front, and if you were first or second or third or 500th in line, you should have been able to choose the color you want.
Oh, okay. So that might have been a better way to get people to buy it earlier.
Yes, exactly. No, a lot of record labels do that properly, where it's...
Doesn't that more encourage the scalpers to get in there first versus it being more randomized?
Most record labels limit your purchases to one.
Sure. So this is called the Legacy Cartridge Collection, which makes me believe that maybe this is the first of more from Capcom. Maybe. We'll see. What stands out to me about this, though, is first and foremost the fact that this isn't the 30th anniversary of Street Fighter 2. It's the 30th anniversary of Street Fighter 1. I just think that's kind of a little detail no one's really talking about. No one gives two craps about Street Fighter 1.
No, everyone gives a crap about Street Fighter 2, so they're acting like it's the beginning. They're retconning this.
That's a little strange to me, just because, you know, if this was, you couldn't re-release Street Fighter 1 to be fighting Street on the TurboGrafx. Three people would have bought that.
Four.
Are you surprised that
this... It would suck, but I would buy it. So four.
Okay, you got to be the contrarian. To me.
Unless you're counting me in the three.
Anyway. So, are you surprised it took 6-7 days to sell out and not sell out immediately?
Yeah, I kind of am, just because Street Fighter fans are fucking insane.
Yeah. Right. Enough to buy an old...
Are there any Street Fighter fans in here?
Yeah. All right.
Are you willing to admit that you're insane? I don't care if you bought it, but are you insane?
Those Street Fighter fans, who bought it? One, two, three out of the 30 fans about that cheered some... Well, that's a small, very small sample size. That's 10%.
That's three in a room of how many?
But this is also a retro game convention. So retro gamers times Street Fighter means that they will have it to buy.
Can we hug it out of this one? I mean,
no, I'm just saying.
Okay.
Like if this was Mega Man X, I think it would have sold out in 10 minutes.
Mega Man X is cheap enough to buy the original cartridge without buying a reproduction at $100.
But that's another point. Is this priced properly at $100?
Well, no, it's not, because you're right. Street Fighter 2 is cheap enough to buy original.
Well, but not just that. I mean, you can say, well, when this came out, this was $80 in the Capcom store that I bought it at Capcom USA. So, at the time. By the way, is he still in frame when he's leaning that way? Do you see him? He's still in frame. Okay, he's making sure. I don't want to leave you.
You're comfortable?
No? This is modern times, though. And again, like you said, this is like a $10 or $15 card at this point, correct?
$15 for regular
old Street Fighter 2?
Eight fighters. Why didn't they fucking do Street Fighter Turbo?
Because that's going to come next year, probably. Or the big third anniversary of something else.
Is this where we're going to? Is this the part you were talking about next?
No. What I'm talking about is this price point is totally wrong for what they're offering.
Yes.
The cartridge costs $5 to produce at most. If they can sell something that's an Alibaba Express for $10, it doesn't cost much to produce these.
Yo, but look at that sweet manual.
Manual's not...
And they're going to give you a sweet box, and they give you a sweet red shell, and you can get a sweet glow-in-the-dark fucking limited edition shell. And you can fucking come in your mouth over the anniversary of Street Fighter. It's not even fucking right. It's bullshit.
By the way, this is not for sure. This panel, if there's any children
it's
here,
never for children. When has this panel ever been for children? And why don't we ever put an R or NC-17 rating on it?
NC-17 means there's acts of sexuality going on.
I might pop my clouds into your face. Anyways.
That would be the end of the CU podcast.
But I mean, that would be a great way to go out.
The comfortable bowl podcast. That's not going to happen.
Anywho.
So what do you get? You get this third anniversary manual that doesn't resemble the Super Nintendo artwork that much. That's the other weird thing about this. Since it's not Nintendo licensed anyway, there's no Nintendo seal, there's no Nintendo mentioned anywhere. It doesn't say Super Nintendo anywhere.
Nintendo doesn't even slap their dick on it.
No, they didn't. So when you look at this box, you can't tell it's a Super Nintendo game. Change it right now, it's like you don't see anything saying. You don't even see even the cheap generic 4-play on Super Nintendo. Like they used to do it like, you know, crappy Atari 2600 cartridges.
Totally.
It's not bootleg. It's officially licensed.
I'm just saying that.
Gene, you're being difficult here. You're leaning in closely way too much for my liking. But anyway,
my computer can't load shit up.
Okay. So, and now it's PG-17. It's at least PG-13 right now. So when we talk about a playable asterisk,
hold on. It's trifold box foil.
It's foil
gloss.
And embossments.
And embossments. I'm fucking sold, dude. $100?
Oh, okay. All I'm saying is this. If they price this at $60 or even $80, well, it was limited to sold out.
Limited.
But
limited.
But if they said to people, we're going to offer you exactly what it was back then with bells and whistles for more, less than what it cost back then.
Even at what it cost back
then. Or even 80. I just think
100. Even at 80.
I think 100 is a little extravagant. But then what the fuck do I know, because they sold them out in like 5-6 days. But if they had like 25,000, they wouldn't be sold out by now still. And the lower price point would have helped. But that's a business discussion.
Well, the fact of the matter is, if they had added more, they would have sold out in 2 or 3 days.
Maybe. But you know what would happen if they added more? More houses would have caught on fire from their Super Nintendos flaming up. Because according to their warning on their page, warning, use of this reproduction game cartridge, the product, on the SNES gaming hardware may cause the console to overheat or catch fire.
Bullshit!
The SNES hardware is deemed a vintage collectible, so please exercise extreme caution, like get out your tongs and oven mitts.
I do not
when
tell
using
you.
The product, he's standing up, he's out of frame, it's on his balls now to go around.
I cannot tell you how many times a week people call me and they're like, you sold me a Super Nintendo and it lit on fire and burned my house down.
Make sure
it's vintage.
Make sure there is a fire extinguishment equipment nearby. It says that.
Use
the product is the sole at the sole risk of the user. The product is sold as is. Neither I am 8-bit nor Capcom make any representation or warranty express or implied of any kind, including any warranty of merchantability or of fitness for a particular use, or that the product is safe to use. And I am 8-bit or Capcom shall have no liability for damage to property or persons arising from use of the product. Nintendo America is in no way associated with the release of this product. All right.
It's fucking physically impossible for a video game to light a system on fire.
I think what their fear was this, and this could have been Capcom telling the IMA bit, we want this really weird liability. Because honestly, then, you need that liability from every retro game dealer here. Because they're selling you games to old, vintage hardware. They're acting like this is like a fucking Model T that is going to blow up when you turn the crank.
Is that too esoteric to reference to anyone?
No, it's anyway. Not. I mean, maybe it is.
Okay, but you see the point, though. It's just really weird.
Luna Video Games sells home fires. That's what we do.
You sell home fires?
We sell home fires. One out of every three games we sell, we hope it burns their house down.
Well, your basic song is a storage room of Zippo lighters, basically. But they're game cards.
Right, but default, faulty Zippo lighters.
You know, no, back in prehistoric times, that's how man first created fire. They got out there, IM 8-bit legacy cartridge.
A copy of Silent Service. And,
Silent Service? And, the 30th anniversary of Silent Service.
And a piece of flint.
A piece of flint. This is, all right, okay. More will probably come. I wonder why they do they want the company that hasn't do that much. What do they do with forbidden games besides this? Ian, do you know
who?
IM8-bit. What do they do with forbidden games besides this? What do they do?
And like I said at the start, they actually put out officially licensed video game soundtracks, which is huge because before that there were just a lot of bootleg video game soundtracks. The original composers weren't getting paid for it. I actually have a really neat bootleg Mega Man 2 soundtrack, but that was before anyone was doing anything licensed. So IM8-bit does a lot of licensed soundtracks. Digidiscs does a lot of licensed soundtracks, and those companies, IM8-bit and Digidiscs, deserve a lot of credit for legitimizing the pressing and the printing of soundtracks.
All right, then. So, Ian, you're on board with whatever they release next, then?
Yeah.
So you're going to buy $100... 30th anniversary of whatever game comes out next?
I didn't see it say that. That's a false equivalency.
Oh, okay. All right. What are these retro pack-in surprises?
I don't know. You tell me.
I'm trying to see.
Candy? Cheetos? Multicolored Cheetos?
Just like a little fold-out poster there with with really horrific artwork that's almost rival. Remember the Street Fighter 2 artwork in Nintendo Power, how bad that was in that fold-out poster? Anyone here have that?
Yeah, but that's like traditional Street Fighter 2 artwork, and I think this is too.
Okay, so it's a step up.
So, I mean, you can talk about it being awful, but it was always awful.
That blank is pretty awful right there. That's a pretty bad day. Dalsim seen better days here. I wish you guys had visuals.
I feel like Dalsim's always seen better days, though. I mean, he's stretchy, dude.
Yeah, he's my yoga
His
partner.
Skin's seen better days.
What's wrong with his skin? He moisturizes?
No, he doesn't.
What? He's very healthy, Dalsim.
Fine.
He's living that yoga lifestyle. Who here does yoga besides me? Anyone? Wow, no one. I'm in Jersey.
Dude, you're on the East Coast.
But I started yoga in New Jersey.
No one does yoga here.
A little bit of yoga.
That's right.
Yeah.
Warrior 2.
Vinyasa.
That's right. So all you people will live longer. Get your asses on that. You got to do that. All right, well, this is enough of this topic, Ian. Anything else here?
No.
Is anyone just going to catch on fire here?
No.
Okay.
You just watched that, then. Good points made by us. The lighting was kind of weird. I apologize for...
Brilliant points always by this team.
So, we also discussed...
Mario not being a plumber. Get ready to watch that.
So, watch that hilarity happen right now.
All right, the other weird news that's come out recently... According to Nintendo's website, I didn't know they had a bio of characters on Nintendo's website. I had no idea what was going on here.
Mario's no longer a plumber.
No longer a plumber. Nintendo said he's not a plumber.
But the thing is Mario hasn't really been a plumber for a long, long time.
He hasn't been since Mario Brothers, technically, right?
I mean, my dad, who played Mario Brothers 3, him and I clearly remember this. Him and I were sitting down one day, and he was playing Mario 3, and he goes, you know, they've really kind of left behind the whole fact that he was a plumber, didn't they? And I was like,
He has overalls still.
Yeah, they really did. And, I mean, it's never gotten any better. I mean, he hasn't been a plumber in ages.
You can even say, technically, in Super Mario Brothers, the only connection was you're going in sewer pipes and... That was really it. At that point, the connection was severed.
And even then, it was tenuous by the time you got to World 8.
It was tenuous before that the whole time. What do you mean?
Well, I mean...
Plumbers don't usually hop on turtles that much and throw fireballs.
Have you ever been a plumber?
No, I haven't. That's right. any plumbers out here that can speak to the veracity of Super Mario Brothers and whether or not that's plumbing?
Kevin's dad was a plumber, and he told me stories.
I hate that Kevin.
Fucking Kevin.
Is there any Kevins here?
Who here is a Kevin?
Kevin? Oh, the one shooting the video.
All right, you might be an okay Kevin.
You might be an okay, but if this gets screwed up or this video anyway.
Most Kevins are not okay.
All right. Is the Kevin I grew up with here, he'd be gone. He'd be escorted out.
The Kevin I grew up here with, I would run at him. And
that would become NC-17 real quick.
Superman punch.
That's Superman punch.
Diamond cutter out of nowhere. Off the chair.
All right. But the point is that Mario, he was definitely a plumber in Mario Brothers, which was the first game he was a plumber. He was a carpenter at Donkey Kong.
Yeah, he was.
They kind of kept
journeyman.
I mean, when you look at the story, it wasn't the traditional Brooklyn plumber thing until they did the Super Mario Brothers Super Show. But that, to me, is kind of canon. Nintendo had to sign off on that show with Captain Lou.
Okay, canon. You know?
So it's canon again, and not just that they're from Brooklyn, and they're plumbers. But that's really the only thing you've heard about in like 30 years that they're plumbers, really.
Right.
What's that?
The movie.
If Nintendo could kill the people responsible for the movie, they would. If they could legally kill those people, they would. You know.
They never wore ties.
The movie's not canon. Oh, very good reference here. Plumbers don't wear ties. Very good. NC-17. But is there ever been any mini games even in any of these Mario games that haven't do that much plumbing or using a plunger or a snake or anything like that?
Yeah, there was the one on the CDI where they had to pull that reel of poop out of the
urinal cassette.
Is that true? I never played that.
No,
Hotel Mario
it's
before.
Not okay. True, Pat. Jesus Christ.
Hey, those Zelda games aren't exactly a high quality, so I don't know. Nintendo would kill what was possible with those
Bills
games, too.
Game where the drunk dude shit in the urinal and,
I have no idea.
Know.
It's CDI. It's Phillips. You're
Mario. Mario had to go scoop it out.
They released Plumber's Auto Ties on 3DO. I don't know what they're doing in that system. Don't blame me. I'm asking the questions. I'm a journalist. I gotta ask the hard questions, Ian. Anyway, so
Plumbing Job and Superstar Saga, but that's about it.
He did it. Plumbing Job and Superstar Saga.
Oh, it's sort of like a small one, yeah.
Okay.
Hey, it's a mention.
He's got to get paid. Well, here's the thing. Let's get realistic. He doesn't live in Brooklyn anymore. Rent's high. Mushroom Kingdom. Maybe there's no rent.
Maybe they don't poop.
Maybe they don't poop. That's a great point.
I mean, that's really my point. It's a video game. You got a prim and proper princess. You've got a Nintendo mascot like Mario. Okay, he's a hero.
Yeah, maybe they don't. This is what
you've
I look
got.
At.
You've got a mushroom person. What's a mushroom person gonna poop?
Smaller mushrooms. I don't know.
Smaller mushrooms, exactly. And you grow powerful from them.
But this is just the Disneyfication of Mario we've seen. Starting with, he's no longer a guy we all presume was like probably 40 to 45. He's 26. And it's like, what? Where did that come from? And I actually have people argue that you can become a master plumber by 26. No, you can't. I don't think so. Let's start with your 12.
And you can't look like that at 26.
Yeah, it's hard to look like that. It's hard to master that mustache and like Captain Lou, at 26. But I think it's just the way that like Mickey Mouse started off as kind of an attitude. It's a little Bart Simpson-esque way back when. They quickly made him the nicest character ever.
Hi, Karamba.
Maybe Mario, they want to do the same thing. They don't want a theme park mascot. He's going to be a theme park mascot soon enough. Where maybe he's not Italian anymore. We don't want to offend Italian Americans, you know. Give it up for Italian Americans. We're in Jersey. That's right, Enzo. That's right. No Enzo's in San Diego, thank God. Anyway.
Hey, Enzo.
I know, Enzo. But I think that's part of the whole process. The whole process of he's now a young age that no one ever thought he would be. He's not a plumber anymore. He's not a person anymore. He's a Mushroom Kingdom citizen or whatever. He's not a human.
Person? Why? Because he's Italian?
Oh.
What are you saying, Pat?
Ian, just going Italian SJW over here. That's what's going on. I can make fun of Italians because I'm partially Italian, I think. Anyway, that makes it good.
I'm partially
Enzo, is it okay? It's okay, Enzo. It's
I'm
okay.
Partially bullshit.
Partially bullshit.
I don't really know what I am.
You don't know what you are?
I got some Scottish in
get
me.
That DNA thing going on. The DNA ancestry test?
Yeah, I should do that.
You think Ian should get a DNA ancestry test?
No. Probably got some dog in me.
Find the origins. We both started.
Got some dog. A little cat.
This is running off the rails real quick, by the way. But Mario always had a great job doing other jobs. I mean, he's been in...
Oh, he's a jack of all trades.
Referee, tennis judge.
Interior painting.
Wasn't he also flying the little paddle?
Roofing.
Roofing? What? He worked on roofs? Is that right? That was an unreleased game. Yeah, he's done a bunch of stuff. He's good. Was he ever a professional race car driver before he did Mario Kart? Was he ever in a race car?
I don't know, but he did Demolition and Wrecking Crew.
That's right. Going back to a little bit of carpentry. It was Alleyway. Wasn't he on the cover of Alleyway driving the paddle ship?
Yeah, I don't know what the fuck that's supposed to
was he
equate to in a job,
that's
though.
Right. Okay.
What kind of job is that?
I don't know. He's Interstellar. I don't know. It's intergalactic. But before then, yeah, anyway.
Planetary. All right, let's go to Q&A.
What are you doing with this?
And we're back. Great points, Ian, about Mario once being a stock car racer on a rare Famicom game in 1989. I don't know.
You made great points, too, Patrick.
Made great points, too. So the rest of this podcast will be us not at a video game con, besides a Q&A that, unless you were there, you probably never see, unless we release our Blu-ray spectacular in 20 years. If there's still Blu-rays, hologram Blu-rays, then, right?
Video disc.
Thank God we weren't late for this news by 2 weeks, or else we'd never hear the end of it. There is a press release that came out today from the Big N. Not PewDiePie's Big N. This is Nintendo talking about the SNES Classic Edition and the what? The NES Classic Edition.
Yeah.
So what's going on here?
Well, let's first start with the NES Classic Edition and just say, hey, it's coming back in 2018.
Now, it was discontinued in April. That's when they announced it being discontinued.
Yes.
They didn't say it was gone forever, though. They just said it's discontinued for now, but we all thought that's it. That's the end.
Well, I think we might have even mentioned during our original discussion on this, or at least if we didn't, there were people who did, who said that that did not mean that the door was always closed.
Oh, sure.
On it coming back. But it did seem kind of dire, especially at the time. They were getting ready to put out the new 2DS.
Mm-hmm. About the same time the announcement was made.
And they were ramping up Switch production because it was going well, and they wanted to...
They were doubling the production.
They were doubling the production. And everyone kind of thought that an SNES Mini was on the way. So if it was going to come back, we didn't know when. And it seemed like, at least for the near future, that was a massively botched project on Nintendo's end.
Sure, because they never even announced that until afterwards. Oh, it was only going to be a holiday release, the NES Classic. Like, right. Oh, that would have been great to know before.
It would have been nice to have known that ahead of time. So the SNES Classic is... this, to me, is a bit better. And to me... I want to poke a couple people over this. I'll poke them.
And this is Nintendo's also shot across the bow at a few entities.
Yes.
They also threw the retailers under the bus for the pre-orders.
And this is good.
That's what we were talking about before.
Nintendo stated when they announced the SNES Classic Edition that they were going to make sure that production was going to be much higher this time. And that they were going to focus on there being a lot more available at retail at launch.
Remember, the NES class was only 2.3 million, as a reminder, which is very low.
Total.
Yeah. That was worldwide, includes the Famicom?
I believe, yeah. No, that was NES Just, Classic.
Okay, European and North America.
And then there was the botched pre-orders with, who was the original one? That was Toys R Us? Walmart?
It was Walmart originally.
And then there were the Toys R Us and...
Amazon, Best Buy.
Yeah.
Which I mine stayed, thankfully.
And, you know, those sold out super quick. And everyone started complaining and bitching and moaning about how Nintendo was fucking it up again. And you and I stated once again that this might not be Nintendo's fault.
Damn you.
Just like we did the first time around with the SNES Mini Classic Edition pre-orders, that this could be very well the retailer's problem.
Jumping the gun or just, I don't know, just doing something stupid, trying to one-up each other. Who knows what the hell happened?
Yeah, exactly. And today Nintendo comes out and says, yeah... That was the retailer's fault, not ours.
Reggie Fils-Aimé said that.
Yeah.
Directly.
And came out and said, do not pay more than $79.99. And he said, you know, basically said, as we said, we are focusing on having plenty at launch. And I can't remember which article it was that we were reading when we were coming up with topics, but one states that they plan on having as many at launch as they did in total during the entire NES Classic run.
That's a press release from
That's
today.
That was
a press release. So originally Reggie said, this was yesterday on September 11th, he said that we aren't providing specific numbers, but we will produce significantly more units of Super NES Classic Edition than we did of NES Classic Edition. Then he also mentioned that, yeah, this was retailers doing what they do. It was beyond our control, the pre-orders, which makes sense. Nintendo can't tell Walmart when to put the pre-orders up and take it down. Nintendo can't do that. All they can do is say, we're going to give you this many amount of units for pre-order. That's all they can do. So the press release comes out, and the press release says this. Due to the incredible demand. So they're recognizing this. This is very key here. Because they never said stuff like incredible demand before the NES Classic came out. They didn't realize that. Right. We'll get into what that means.
But anyways.
due to the incredible demand for the Super Nintendo Entertainment System, Super NES Classic Edition, which is redundant, Nintendo plans to ship the retro-inspired product into 2018. Originally, it was just going to be for the holiday season of 2017. Originally, shipments were announced to cease at the end of this calendar year. In addition, more units of the Super NES Classic will ship on its September 29th launch date in the U.S. than were shipped of NES Classic Edition all of last year, with subsequent shipments arriving in stores regularly. Fans have shown their unbridled enthusiasm for these classic edition systems, so Nintendo is working to put many more of them onto store shelves, which is good because then that makes it harder for scalpers and their bots to go on websites and buy 50 at a time.
Which was something that I believe I brought up, or one of us brought up, but I think I had brought, we had talked about the last time, was the benefit. Because everyone's so concerned about these fucking pre-orders. The pre-orders are kind of where the problem lies. If they're on store shelves and everyone can walk in and get one, scalpers are cut off at the knees. Yeah. It's a lot harder for them to take advantage of the situation.
Yeah.
Especially if stores are smart enough to limit people to say two.
Yeah. Then it becomes next to impossible.
You know, you can get one for yourself and you can get one for a friend. Yeah. But that's it.
You know, even if you have a couple of friends or family members buying them, then okay, maybe get six. But you're not getting 50 with your fucking bot. You're not going to have that pyramid stack of 100 that people are still having trying to sell. And right now, the NES Classic is like $200 still.
Yeah.
Or actually less, buy it now on eBay brand new. So this is key. Something happened here. Something happened, especially with the following. Because that was like, okay, that makes sense. Because they said that we're going to do better. But then they said next summer, Nintendo will also bring back the NES Classic Edition with new shipments. More information about the timing of the return of NES Classic Edition will be announced in the future. I wonder what Pat the NES Punk thinks about that. Maybe we'll find out. So, of course, people have the right to be skeptical about Nintendo in the past.
They sure do.
Skeptical about Nintendo in the past not doing this. But the fact that they say in a press release that they say unbridled enthusiasm, incredible demand, you know, phrases like that. That is really good because they usually don't say shit like that.
Right.
So this is what I think would happen. I honestly think this is Nintendo of America basically fucking Reggie. I can picture Reggie getting a baseball bat and his crew flying over to Tokyo and busting some fucking heads.
Yeah.
And saying, listen, we are leaving tons of money on the table.
Mm-hmm.
He can't say this stuff publicly because he's not the one in charge.
Right.
Japan is. But he's probably showing them charts and graphs and all the fucking scalpers and saying, people are paying $200 for these. We can make more and make a ton of bank. And somehow the message fucking got through that by doing this, you're not cannibalizing your virtual console sales. It has nothing to fucking do with Switch sales at all. Nothing. So somehow, some way, this message got through.
He showed them videos of crying baby adults not getting their toys.
I just think he pulled an Al Capone from the Untouchables and just beat someone over the head with a baseball bat.
I just wanted to agitate the people who got mad at me last podcast.
Oh, about pull up your Pampers?
Oh, apparently there was a whole NeoGAF thread where people were very angry at me.
Was there really?
But
Ian, those are your people at NeoGAF.
I don't know.
Those are your kind.
People misunderstood me.
They all have your SJW pins on NeoGAF.
Apparently people misunderstood me as promoting piracy when really all I was saying was fucking get over it.
Can I be preemptively banned from NeoGAF? That'd be awesome. So I hear everyone, they just ban everyone left and right for no reason. Anyway, great news. Now, I understand why it's going to take a while to get the NES Classic back into the till, probably. They probably have to get the SNES out first and reassess where they are next year. This is what their focus is right now.
And they're probably using some similar parts, too.
Similar, probably assembly lines, similar, you know, similar parts, similar production people that are probably doing that work.
I think this answers a question that a lot of people ask, too, which is the one about the N64 Classic Edition. I think this safely says that an N64 Classic Edition, if it's coming, is not coming for a few years, because we've got the SNES Mini going into 2018. Then NES, we have the SNES Classic coming in summer of 2018, and I would not be surprised if enthusiasm is still there that that pushes into 2019.
Sure.
Because that, why not run that through the 2018 holiday season in 2019?
Why not? If the sales don't slow down, this is like, oh my God, Nintendo's seeing the light. They can sell 20 million of these easily.
Right.
And at $80 price point for the SNES one, if people were saying, oh, they weren't making much of a profit before with the NES, they definitely are at $80. They definitely are. Even though that extra controller costs them $2, you know, to do that extra controller. But the fact of the matter is, there's less licensed games that they have to go out and get for the SNES, and it's $20 more.
Oh, by the way, I saw a, literally today, I saw a knockoff NES Mini. A lady came in looking for an audio-video cable for the NES Mini, for a knockoff one. It had 2 9-pin controller boards.
Oh, I've seen these, I think.
With 2 really shitty NES, you know, knockoff controllers with 9-pin controller ports.
Okay.
A sticker on the front in that generic font that seems to be on all Chinese bootleg merchandise,
mm-hmm.
that said Nintendo Entertainment Player. And then
was this in the box or loose?
It was in a box. So, and the box was just awful.
Because I've seen boxes now look pretty good.
No, no. This was awful. This didn't even try.
Okay, was she trying to trade this in?
No, no. She just wanted an AV cord. She just wanted an AV cord for it. But it was an AV cord format I have never seen before. But she's like, I got this NES Classic offline and it didn't come with an AV cord. And I was like, yeah, I'm sorry, I don't have this. The power and reset buttons did not have any wording on them. And they both clicked all the way in. The reset button didn't pop
back out.
Back out.
So this is worse than the ones we saw that you can probably tell us.
The one that I said looked like a beat up like lunch sandwich. Yeah, no, this was
a lunch sandwich?
Yeah, like a,
as opposed to a dinner sandwich.
I meant one that you would find like shut up. One that you would find like in a paper bag, I meant like crushed by 2 school books. No, okay. This was awful looking. But yeah.
So this is great news though. I mean,
yes.
And of course, again, you can be skeptical about this, but until they fuck this up, the fact that they confidently said there's going to be 2.3 million at least on September 29th, that's just for day one, which means to believe that throughout the rest of the month, there's going to be a 10 million at least.
We'll see. But even if there's 1.5
at on launch, that's a hell of a lot better. Instead of squeaking them out, barely shitting them out.
When they announced it, we talked about if there was pyramids of these at Best Buys and GameStops at launch, you know, they could sell all of them, and it's going to be the case.
Yeah,
but we might actually see stacks of these.
That's one of the things I used to say. Yeah, imagine the display at Target when you had like, you know, 70, 80 of them just there, and they'd be gone within a day or two.
Yeah,
and they could replenish that every other day for the holiday season. So now we're going to see.
Right.
They didn't do it for the NES because we realized they didn't have any to promote at the Super Bowl or even on Monday Night Raw. There was no commercials.
Right.
Now we'll see what commercials, because they're producing, say, 10 million, 20. There's going to be commercials. There's going to be promotion besides just YouTube to the general public. That's going to be interesting to see. And I think that's going to open up the eyes in Nintendo Japan to see, oh, shit, what did we do? What did we lose out on last holiday season for the future? And yeah, we'll see about the N64 Classic. I'm with you. I don't see it coming out anytime soon. I think because, one, the controllers are a little more complicated and more expensive. Two, those games go for a lot more in the Virtual Console.
Well, like we've talked about in private before. Yeah. They don't want to devalue those. But just from a basic production standpoint, I think this chokes it up too much for them to even consider it for a while.
True. But it's not like this is overly complicated. I saw, in order to put out multiple products, I think it's silly to think that. I saw one article on Forbes by Eric Kane.
That was a shit article.
Basically saying that there's no reason why it's a mistake for Nintendo to release more NES Classic. Why it's a mistake? Is it a mistake they're going to be selling these out next summer? That the demand's still going to be through the roof?
Because he has 10 in his closet and he wants to make a lot of money.
Are you calling out Eric Kane as a scalper? Is that what you're doing? But
sure.
He said, this is ridiculous, by the way. These old NES games are fine, but they rely on nostalgia more than anything. And nostalgia gets old fast. To be honest, the games on the NES Mini are pretty dated at this point.
Oh, God, suck my nips, Eric.
Few of these games can rival the Mini SNES catalog. So Super Mario 3 is no good still? Like, that's just no good. That's not still considered one of the best platformers of all time. Is that right, Ian? Dr. Mario is still not an excellent puzzle game? Really? Is there really, you really need that big of an upgrade from the NES to the Super Nintendo to play Dr. Mario? Are you telling me that? Seriously? Come on, Eric. You know better. And even if you said...
Is he going to tell me that Jeff Beck's not a good guitarist? I mean, just because he's fucking old?
The truth is, games improved in pretty enormous ways between the two systems, making the SNES far more desirable than the NES Classic Edition, at least as something people are likely to actually play.
Wow. Oh my God, shut the fuck up. The games play the same. They just look slightly different.
I was going to say, the
mechanics.
There's probably no other two systems on the planet where one was literally the super version of the one that came before it. Like, it really was. Because stylistically, the games were largely the same.
Yes.
On the next system, they just, again, like you said, graphically better, musically, audio was better, and you had more buttons. But yeah, it was really the same style of games.
The differences between something like the Master System and the Genesis were way different, but the Super Nintendo and the regular Nintendo, it was just a leap in processing and graphics and sound.
Sure. So, not a mistake for this to happen, because people are going to love this and buy it, and Nintendo's going to make a shitload of money, and they're still going to make a profit off the NES Classic. The big question, though, with the NES Classic, Ian, is whether or not they're going to do stuff like fix the controller cord length on that, because it is going to be longer for the SNES Classic. Are they going to change the game lineup? I'd probably say no to that. But are they going to patch it somehow so you can't hack it? They have the time to do that. They probably will do that. That's what I think is going to happen.
I don't care. I mean, I think there's something... I think there's something almost quaint and unique about it not being able to be hacked, so I wouldn't actually be against that. I think there's something interesting to be said about it.
Will there be a different box so the first edition will still be worth a lot more?
I'll lick my ass. I think that it'll only be changed if licensing is a problem or up, and I would like to see them include two controllers so there's not that crazy controller rush.
Oh, we didn't think about that. They're going to have to produce a lot more controllers if they're going to be putting out like 5 million, 10 million more NES Classics.
Well, you got to figure the SNES controller is slightly more expensive and they're putting two in that box. It would make sense for them to put two NES controllers in that box, especially because I think we kind of went over it, but there was almost more or at least equal amounts of two-player important games on the NES Classic, like Tecmo Bowl and Double Dragon 2.
Well, in Europe, you can get the controller. They're the same ones. They're just different box for $40. It used to be only $15 or $20 because I think they must have found a new bunch of stock. I was going to say new old stock, but the thing is barely out of stock. But in the U.S., you can't find them. U.S. people are trying to get $150 by it now for the controller, for the single controller, which is insane. Yeah, here's someone who has a stack of 50 controllers of the European ones, $35 by it now from Greece. Get your Greek NES Classic controllers. All right, good news, and then we'll see if Nintendo drops the ball again. But I think, like I said, I think Reggie started busting heads like Negan in Walking Dead. I think he had to make an example out of someone. At least in my mind, that's what it is. I picture, Reggie being the enforcer now. That's. Let me tell you about That's It Fruit and Veggie Bars. You know That's It Fruit Bars. Ian and I have spoke about them on the podcast. I still don't know how they work. There's only fruit in here. Apple and strawberry, apple and mango, apple and coconut. Well, now they have That's It Veggie Bars. A little bit different, right? So these are, in my mind, a more healthy version or a healthier version of a granola bar. But you have veggies in here and bean combinations. So my favorites are black beans and peas. There's black beans and corn. Black beans and carrots, and they're healthy, 90 calories each about. It's non-GMO. There's no additives in there. There's no preservatives in there. It's gluten-free. They're tasty. They're tasty. It's a light snack on the go. Throw it in your car or your little knapsack or your purse, or do people still have fanny packs? Whatever. The whole point is that it's a nice, healthy snack, and it won't weigh you down, and it feels good. It feels good to eat something healthy every now and then, right? Go to thatsitfruit.com, enter code CUPODCAST, and save 10% on any order. Again, it's under 100 calories, 4 grams of veggie protein, great source of fiber, non-GMO, no preservatives, no fat, gluten-free. Use it for a snack, for a treat. You won't feel guilty at midnight like me sometimes grabbing one of these. Once again, go to thatsitfruit.com and enter code CUPODCAST to save 10% today. Ian, you weren't on the podcast when the initial reaction to our pal Felix PewDiePie came down.
But I did come back, like, the podcast after, because I got to give my impressions and people, you know.
You did. After,
right into
after,
me.
After they barbecued me for a couple weeks.
And then I got a taste of that, too.
Yeah, that was, I think you can no longer say they only did lately. Everyone likes you, Pat. They all hate me.
Crispy skin.
But what happened was, you know, he had a string of anti-Semitic humor, Nazi jokes. The Wall Street Journal posted about it. Might have helped start the apocalypse along with a couple other little things. And then we're still suffering from the fallout of that.
People felt the need to defend him.
Sure. So what happened recently? So there was a live stream where he was playing a third-person shooter game. What was it called? Player Unknown's Battlegrounds Multiplayer Survival Shooter. No idea what that is.
That's the game that Norm and I keep trying to get you to play.
Oh, is that you said it's like a new version of Rainbow Six, basically?
No, it's like Battle Royale.
Oh, well, maybe we can play it with Felix because then he can call us the N-word while we're playing.
Yeah, and boy, did it come out of his mouth so smooth, like a number 4 on the Bristol scale. like he says it every day.
Well, that's what I think what's kind of surprising. Not surprising about it, because you know he's a edgy guy, and I use that loosely, but that's his humor. But what's interesting is that when people were trying to defend him, they was like, oh, it was a heated gaming moment. No, it wasn't. It was as heated as me playing a game of Snake on my graphing calculator in high school.
Yeah.
Yep. That's about as heated as it got.
Also, heated gaming moment is one of the stupidest fucking phrases I've ever heard. Heated gaming moment. I've yelled a lot of things during heated gaming moments. I've never felt the need to yell a racial slur.
I think that's the other weird part about it, is that when people are jumping to defend Felix, and Felix actually apologized, hey, we're going to get into it, but good that he did that, because he was very defiant about... you know, the Hitler did nothing wrong jokes and the death to all Jews jokes and things like that. He was like, oh, I'm just an artist, I'm a performer, entertainer. This, though, I think, to a lot of people, even crossed that line. People that were willing to defend him before, not everyone, but even some are like, okay, this is a little much now. Because, again, this wasn't him trying to do some sort of elaborate Fiverr joke where he pays someone to do, see how far they're going to go, even though the joke was really stupid. And you can do a lot of other things instead of that joke to make the same fucking point. This was just, like you said, casually comes out of his mouth like he's talking about peanut butter and jelly sandwiches.
Yep.
And that, to me, is sort of what I think really hit people. It's like, oh, this is that casual racism people talk about that we think is just a catchphrase. This is what it is.
Right.
So I think that's what hit home for more people.
Problematically, I think, too, is that... people are like, well, it's just a word. It's just an insult. Or he didn't mean it that way. It was just, you know, a heated gaming moment. And, you know, it slipped out of his mouth as an insult. He didn't mean it because, you know, he doesn't like black people or this or that. And it's like, think for 2 seconds about what you're fucking saying. And I'm not even talking about Felix. I'm thinking about the people who are defending him. If you say something as an insult, then that means you think there's a negative connotation to that word.
Or you know what that connotation is. You know the meaning of it.
That's immediately... immediately that argument is shot. It's defenseless. It's like... And I used to fucking go off on people in high school all the time for this. It was like when people would use derogatory terms for gay people. Oh, well, I just use that word because, you know, it's just an insult. You know, it's a word that sounds, you know, impactful and, you know, gets across a meaning. And it's like, but why is that an insult? Why is that a powerful word to you? Because you know what it means and you know it's offensive and you know it hurts other people.
Yeah, I think obviously the term he used is so harsh because it conjures up so much at one time.
Oh, it conjures up fucking...
It conjures up the history of slavery.
A history of...
The Civil War, Jim Crow, what was it, 20,000 lynchings that went on over a 40-50-year period in this country?
Lynching?
We're talking lawless lynchings where that was screamed at people that were either burned alive in the United States. This isn't a foreign country, or just lynched en masse without any justice to be done to those people that did that. So there's a lot more to this word than I would argue a lot of other racial slurs, other ethnic slurs.
Especially, at least
in this country. Sure. At least in this country. Like, he's not American, which I brought up before, maybe a little sloppily, that maybe where he's from in Sweden, there's a different history of racial terms. Doesn't excuse it.
Doesn't
that's a possibility. I'm going to say this, though. Before we get to his apology, and I'll say this to anyone defending that word: if you can defend the use of that word so easily, feel free to say it around African Americans in the future.
Yep, give it a shot.
If you think it's harmless and you think it's just a word, go ahead and use it. Go ahead.
And I want to make this argument because I thought this argument was fucking great. It's not mine. I wish I could credit whoever I saw making it on Twitter, but it was. If you think it's just a word and that people need to not be upset about it,
mm-hmm.
then when we call you racist for using it, well, then racist is just a word and you need to not get upset about that and you need to not defend yourself and get all up in arms about us calling you racist. It's just a word.
The best probably slam I saw about this was that I guess journalist Ian Miles Chong.
He's a fucking piece of shit. Okay, if I could...
Ian? The best response I said when he said, Felix using... I don't want to paraphrase him. But he basically said, Felix using the N-word, and that was what he typed out, N-word is not a big deal. You have to get over it. And someone responded, if it's not a big deal, why did you use the quote N-word and not use the full word itself?
Because he's a fucking piece of shit.
No, because he knows it's wrong.
I know, exactly. Because he's a fucking coward, and he's constantly...
He knows it's wrong, too, and he's dying on a really bad hill.
He's constantly dying on a bad hill.
It's an awful hill to die on. And again, this isn't someone that's an actor in a movie. This is someone whose audience is younger people and children. PewDiePie. And that was always my biggest issue with it, is that it's the whole, like you said, people going to high school used to use different terms when we were in high school that we grew up and got over with. To make this acceptable to me is kind of disgusting. So before we get into his apology, I was going to say I would have given his apology a lot more credit. And he said the right things in the apology. He said, I should do better. People look at me. I'm on YouTube. This is maybe
I haven't learned from my past mistakes.
He said, it's not that I think I can say or do whatever I want and get away with it. That's not it at all. I'm just an idiot. So I do agree you are an idiot to some extent. I will agree with you there. But I think you can get away with it at this point. Just because you're a multimillionaire, if you left YouTube tomorrow, it wouldn't matter. But he at least appeared, he appeared sorry, like honestly sorry. But the problem is the damage has been done by him. Because when Charlottesville happened, the fucking tweet I saw was when it showed all those assholes with the tiki torches marching. All the alt-right, fucking supremacist, Pepe prick-sucking son of a bitches. His response was...
They must have watched too many PewDiePie videos.
Oh, Felix, you sure got your fucking thumb on the pulse of what the criticism was of you. Now, no one ever said your videos made people racist or made them white supremacist or made them alt-right. What we were saying is, congratulations, you became the favorite YouTuber of the alt-rights and the white supremacists and the fucking Pepe prick suckers. You did, buddy. Whether or not you wanted that to happen, you made it happen.
As far as his apology goes, and no offense, Pat, I gotta say this. Fuck his apology. He didn't say the right things. He said the things he needed to say to save any semblance of any career he might ever fucking have again.
Maybe this was his tipping point, though. Some people have to hit rock bottom. I'm just gonna say, I don't know what's in his heart.
I don't think he has a rock bottom.
Everyone does, Ian.
Okay, sure. Everyone has a rock bottom.
He's a young guy still. They're, you know, from what people say, he is one of these like sort of introverted guys. And I meet these guys now. I know these YouTubers. They get fame way too young.
Sure.
They get money way too young, and they don't know how to handle it. They don't have a time to grow up.
You don't go from making a comment like that Charleston comment
fucking
well, that's the go to this.
Well, that's what I mean. That's where I'm saying that he still has something to learn. But maybe this is maybe something like this hits it home for holy shit, what am I doing?
You don't smoothly shit the N-word out of your mouth like that and then suddenly have a fucking change of heart in 3 days.
I just wish, though, that he moderated his goddamn comments, or at least in his apology didn't allow comments, because you saw some pretty fucking nasty replies to his even apology. And you saw what sort of fans he's and people he's attracting. Let's just say that he did. That he attracted with his brand of humor. So whether or not, buddy, whether or not you're proud of it now, you got to fucking own it, because this is your legacy at this point in time. Not saying you can't turn around. Not saying you can't get better. But this is when I was getting on you for you stirring the pot like you were. You got to realize what the ramifications are versus just, I'm just entertainer and comedian. And again, this isn't a free speech issue. You can say whatever the fuck you want. You can go and play all your games and say any racial slurs you want. But now you got to own up to it, what you are, what you've the fan base and community you have. And going forward, what are you going to be like? What are you going to stand up for?
It's almost like we were right about him all along.
Yeah, so anyone that came after me back then, like I'm the bad guy, I couldn't see into his heart a little bit. I think I was on the money a little bit, at least a little bit. Of his immaturity and not knowing what the effects, ramifications of what he was doing were on his fucking 12-year-old audience. They're not all 12-year-olds. No, they're not all 12-year-olds. They're 14 and 15.
His heart's a fucking sewage pump.
So this leads, though, to the ramifications. DMCA being done by Campo Santo co-founder Sean Vanneman.
Firewatch.
The Firewatch developer, he tweeted that they were going to do DMCA takedown requests to remove all videos of PewDiePie playing his company's title. He tweeted, I'm sick of this child getting more and more chances to make money off of what we make. And he said, PewDiePie is worse than a closeted racist. He's a propagator of despicable garbage that does real damage to the culture around this industry. That's the other point about what this does to gaming culture. Like this is the worst of gaming culture. This is the 12-year-old Xbox live kiddies playing Call of Duty. Uh-huh. And you hear the clips. When people try to troll these little kids, they go right to the racial slurs, they go right to the homophobic name-calling and things like that. And this is, again, this is the face of YouTube. So, I saw Jim Sterling talk about this a little bit, about he's officially a liability to all of YouTubers. And you can say whether or not it's justified or not, but we are where we are. He accelerated all the quote-unquote adpocalypse turmoil. Because if I'm an advertiser, I don't want my shit in front of this asshole.
No.
I don't want my games in front of him. But now we're in a weird state now where he's now causing a game developer to file a DMCA against a YouTuber. And this now brings us into shady sort of legal territory, because there's no legal precedent for whether or not a Let's Play is fair use or not.
Exactly.
In my opinion, I would say this, and this might be where it ends up in court eventually. It might be like with the review, how much of the game are you showing, the length of what you're showing,
is
the extent
of it. Is it transformative?
So maybe you do a Let's Play for 15 minutes, 20 minutes, you edit it up, and maybe that's okay. But if you're most Let's Players and you fucking do a 10-hour Let's Play of the entire game, maybe that's not okay. The whole point is that we have no legal precedent. There's been no rulings about it. And I think both sides are afraid to get to that point, because you're going to have the one side where the developers love the free publicity. They love that these guys do Let's Plays and sell them games. On the other side, you have YouTubers. Let's Players probably scared to death if it comes down that Let's Plays are not legal in terms of fair use. So that sort of bridge hasn't been crossed yet. But if
we're getting closer.
Well, if a bunch of other developers decide certain YouTubers like him, they don't want to be represented or have their product shown in that light, we're going to get to court more sooner than later.
Yeah,
I don't know how that's going to end up. I don't know how that ramification is going to be, because that might then take out a whole fucking genre of videos. It might impact Twitch even in terms of legality, where maybe most developers still don't care about their stuff getting less played. But then if one certain developer says, fuck you, I don't want you playing it, they're going to have no legal recourse once they yank it away.
Right.
So YouTube, huh? It's all fun and games.
Yeah.
Until someone irresponsible doesn't know to keep his mouth fucking shut.
So, Rockstar is bringing L.A. Noire to the PS4, Xbox One, and most importantly, I think, the Switch.
Most importantly.
them bringing it to the PS4 and the Xbox One is, frankly, not at all interesting to me. Ports of games from, say, the PS2 and the Xbox era, to me, are interesting because it keeps these games on the market and available for people to play. It's part of preservation of games. Okay,
sure. And there could be some nice updates to them,
right? And that's always nice too. You get some, you know, fidelity upgrades, but it keeps these games available for people to play, especially as backwards compatibility becomes something that is not possible. They don't want to do, but it, I mean, really, we are getting to the point where, as much as people complain about it, in some instances, it's becoming a technical impossibility. But honestly, L.A. Noire, and I mean, it was released last generation. I don't
2011.
Know. 2011. Yeah. And, sure, it would be nice, I think. I mean, you loved the game, to play it again in, you know, for some people, in a nicer graphical setting with some extras. But I'm not so sure that we need that. I mean, we need that re-release. I think, you know, people with PS4s and Xbox Ones would rather see maybe a sequel. What's interesting is it coming to the Switch, and while why that's interesting is it's third party support. It's more third party support for the Switch. What we're seeing is Rockstar Games offering third party support for the Switch. Now, right now, it's just in the form of a re-release. But if this game does well on the Switch, well, that means, I mean, Rockstar is one of the big publishers. That could be huge. That's Grand Theft Auto.
This is the biggest third-party developer I think they could possibly get. I think. If you had to pick one to go over to the Switch, this to me would be the most impactful one off the bat. If I had to pick one that is currently not on it, in my opinion.
Sure. Yes.
So, first, before we get into the impact, what I like about this re-release, and this is the one thing that pissed me the fuck off, this, more than any other fucking game when it came out, had different mission packs that were exclusive. Whether you pre-ordered it at GameStop, Walmart, Target, and there might have been, I think Toys R Us.
I thought there was a Best Buy one.
There was at least four different exclusive missions that you could only play if you... So I was like, holy shit, do I get the traffic pack? Or I get that one? Or I get that... Like, so I had to pick, oh, maybe traffic. So I've never played all the missions, so this is going to have everything. All the extra missions. So, of course, is this a perfect game? No. But it took chances, it took risks. We haven't seen a game like it afterwards with this much acting and basically having a reason for acting that instilled in the player choices, where it's like, oh, I got to like try to read people and talk to them. And yeah, you can solve almost every mission multiple ways, even if you fucked up. I get it. It was still a cool idea. It was cool to have like a GTA-type game in 1947 LA. So yeah, this is definitely Rockstar dipping their toe in the water.
And if it does well...
dipping their toe in the water.
Oh, Jesus. Get your foot down.
And this isn't a big risk of Rockstar to do this.
No.
So you can make the argument that, well, you know, if this was an all-new game, there's no way they would do it. But that's why I love this, because I'm definitely going to get a game on here that, at least, okay, I love this because this is a game that you wouldn't, the Switch wouldn't get otherwise, but it's also a game the Switch probably needs to give it a boost as well. This is sure. Like the adult game on the kiddie console that's coming out November 14th. And then, of course, like you said, maybe there'll be a re-release of GTA 5 and maybe they can get that onto the Switch.
And, you know, it might not be the PS4 or the Xbox One version, but something in between.
Yeah.
Because, you know, this was running on Xbox 360 and PS3. They can get that running on the Switch. And people forget, GTA, oh, well, it's just another re-release. Well, for a lot of people, there's a lot of attractiveness to being able to take that on the go.
If I haven't played it, it's new to me.
Right. And and it's, you get the portability and also the ability to play it on the TV screen. So I think for a lot of people, even just the ability to have something like L.A. Noire, or the potential to have something GTA 5 on the go, is enough to get them excited.
Yeah, so if GTA 5 ran fine in the 360, obviously it didn't look as good as the Xbox One.
Yeah, but that's the version. I mean, one knew it was coming out for the Xbox One at the time.
That's
my
point.
That was the version
though
that was critically acclaimed.
If we got something that looked
as good as the 360 version of GTA 5 on the Switch. That's a game changer. Because then all of a sudden, this is not just, oh, we have the Legend of Zelda open world. Now we can do open world stuff. Maybe it doesn't look as shiny as the PS4 or the Scorpio or whatever the hell else. But at least you got it. Right. You know, at least you fucking got it. And then maybe that means then when the next Red Dead game comes out, yeah, it won't look as nice. Maybe the frame rate will drop to 30. But at least you fucking got it on a portable. And then Nintendo wins.
And then I think, just to go back to it, unlike the Wii U, where, you know, if Nintendo had gotten a game on the Wii U that was also on the PS3 or the Xbox 360, I mean, that's not exactly right, because that also could have been the Wii. Anyways, and they had compared it, and these were just home consoles, then people would not have seen any benefit necessarily to having that game on the Wii U, necessarily. But because of the nature of the Switch, how it works, the fact that you can do the multiplayer, the fact that you can do the portability, then I think these things like slight graphical downgrades and things like that aren't going to matter as much to people because of what you can do with the Switch.
Sure. I'm trying to think about, what if they re-released GTA 5 and did something with a second player? I don't know. I'm just spitballing. Who knows? You know,
there's multiplayer in GTA 5, so technically you could do link up with two Switches and just do local multiplayer and stuff.
Oh, there you
like
go.
That.
You're thinking you're doing doing Rockstar's marketing for them. So again, I think this is great news. So I almost on principle have to buy this on the Switch again because I want to fucking pre-order at four different locations to play all the missions. But like I said, if you get a GTA 5 re-release or you get the next Red Dead game somehow on the Switch, maybe that won't be as likely, but who knows? I don't know. I think then Nintendo's where they're going to be, where I thought they would have been with the Wii U, but never ended up, you know, 5 years later.
Right.
So there you go. Are you going to shave again, Ian?
I've been contemplating it.
I'm going to shave tomorrow, and I have some razors from Dollar Shave Club I could use.
How many blades?
Well, it's funny you should ask, because you got a choice. So if you go to dollarshaveclub.com/CU podcast, any blade there is only $1 with no obligation for the first month and free shipping. You have a choice of the executive, 6 blades. It's usually $9, $1 the first month. If you want to go a little more conservative, you get the 4X. And how many blades does that mean? Get 4. It's in the name.
I was always a fan of the classic 2-blade.
The 2, that's the humble twin. It's humble.
I like the humble twin. And they give you a nice handle. I've used Dollar Shave Club before.
The handles
are weighty.
The handles are sturdy.
You can hit
some. And these all come with like 5 replacement. Let's see. The humble twin has 5 replacement cartridges. You get 4 replacements with the 4X. And the executive, the one I recommend, is that you get 6 blade cartridges in that pack. Again, there's no obligation. You can cancel any time. It's a dollar for the, you know, even if you want an extra razor just for travel, it's worth it, you know. Mm-hmm. Go to dollarshaveclub.com/CU podcast. Get started there. There's also lots of other cool stuff they have. You know, they have a bunch of gift boxes, things like that. Shave butter. They have those five, what is it? The 5 wipe Charlies? What are those called?
One wipe Charlies.
One wipe Charlies. They have, they got shaving cream, post shave cream. They have gift cards. Again, go to dollarshaveclub.com/CU podcast. See what they have to offer there. And then Loot Crate, Ian. Ian, what do you like about Loot Crate?
What I like about...
I'm asking you like you're in second grade. Use a declarative sentence and repeat the subject, Ian.
What I like about Loot Crate is all the fun themes that they do. Sometimes you get superheroes. Sometimes you get cyber themes like Tron and Transformers. Sometimes you get mystery themes, you know, and then you would get like Jessica Jones stuff in there.
Sure.
So every month, you know, you get a Loot Crate and it's a different theme and you get totally exclusive stuff. There's usually a t-shirt, generally sometimes like a figurine, and then you get some cool pins, and various stuff like that.
And Ian, this theme, you may not know it, maybe you do from the last podcast, it's robotic.
Ooh.
So what happens in robotic? You'll find items from Star Wars, Star Trek, Aliens, and Blade Runner. Remember, the new movie's coming out soon.
That's right.
So check that out. You have until September 19th at 9 p.m. Pacific to try out. Go to lootcrate.com/Pat. Use code Pat for 10% off any new subscription. There's also Loot Crate DX, where it's a bigger box, more gooder, more bigger. There's Loot Pets. There's also Loot Gaming as well you can try out. Again, they're a proud sponsor of the CU Podcast. There's good stuff in there. Now it's quality over quantity as well, and it's just about all exclusive. The t-shirts are usually good. Like, oh, yeah. They're usually good. Even if I don't personally like the t-shirt, they're all like well made. I was wearing
very cool design.
I was wearing the one of my favorite ones, the first ones I got, the Green Ranger White Ranger. I fucking love that shirt. I wear it too much.
That's a classic.
People are asking about it. Random people that say, hey, I kind of recognize that. What is that? I'm like, yeah, it's Green Ranger, White Ranger. They're like, oh, the original? I'm like, yeah.
Didn't someone ask about it at the airport?
At the airport restaurant.
Yeah.
When I got you a free meal. That's all their weird story. Anyway, go to lootcrate.com/Pat. Use code Pat for 10% off any new Loot Crate subscription. Loot Crate, thank you for sponsoring the CU Podcast. Ian, we have a scumbag.
Scumbag. Seller of the week.
Scumbag.
Scumbag.
Week. Seller.
Week.
Seller.
Week.
Who is this scumbag seller?
Fuck Chunk Toys with their fucking terrifying ass logo.
It's like a big blue-eyed baby with a gigantic head.
I eat souls for breakfast, lunch, and dinner.
What?
I've got one in this box. Wow. Ow. Anyways, yeah, so this will be fun. I hope these...
Great timing with the other topic.
I hope they eat the farm, sell the farm. Eat the money, whatever it is.
Eat their face.
So Chunk Toys, everyone, you want one of those Nintendo Entertainment System SNES Classic? Wow, the listing is dumb. Nintendo Entertainment System SNES Classic Edition. You can pre-order one through them for $499.
And 99 cents.
And 99 cents.
That rounds up to $500.
Yeah,
$500. I mean, we talk about scalping before.
Yes.
I've not seen it to this level. And this is like a legitimate website, it looks like. This isn't just some eBay seller.
I mean, they think they're legitimate, but I mean, they're actually just a pile of dog shit. But I mean, this is insane. And I love Schadenfreude. This is fantastic when, you know, scalpers get caught with their pants down like this.
And this is what Nintendo and Reggie, our pal Reggie Fils-Aimé, basically said, don't buy from third-party scalpers. That's, be patient, boys and girls.
Right.
Uncle Reggie's here to save you from these assholes.
And this is why I think people really need to calm down.
Pull your Pampers up, right?
Pull your fucking Pampers up. Fucking don't shit your socks. And just wait. Even with things like the NES Classic Edition, we are... Don't fill your shoes. We are living.
That's disgusting.
Yeah, it is. Don't squish it between your toes. We are living in a magical era where anything is possible. This is not the 80s where video games are. Don't poop out your ears. We are. Be a big boy or girl and don't cry about things like toys. We're living in an era where when companies see a demand for something, they can always make more, or they can right the wrongs. And who can't right their wrongs is Chunk Toys here, who thinks that they're going to who thought they were going to make a lot of money off of people who desperately wanted something, and now they're not. The reason why I also don't look like Chunk Toys here is when we put this up on our docket, digging around a little, Chunk Toys appears to be their entire business model seems to be selling shit that's popular at a incredibly high markup, because they have Hatchimals. Now, I don't exactly know what a Hatchimal is, but it was a big toy last year, probably just as desirable to some people as the NES Classic.
Sure, why not?
And I think they're supposed to retail for about $35. Well, you can get them on Chunk Toys for $100, or if you want all seven of them, you can pay $1,000 and get all seven of them delivered to you.
That doesn't sound reasonable for some reason. Not even knowing the market, it doesn't sound reasonable.
No, it doesn't sound reasonable.
But let's check a couple others just to be clear.
Okay.
How about the Hatchimals Barakeet Pink and Black Egg?
Okay.
It's in stock at Chunk Toys. Maybe it's hard to get these. In stock for $179.99.
Ooh, okay.
Let's go to eBay.
All right.
And see what's going on. Oh, brand new for $110. Buy it now.
Oh, okay.
Okay. Follow with me? I have no fucking clue what a fucking fingerling is.
Neither do I.
I do know, though, that I can get the Bella Pink Monkey. It's adorable, actually. You put them on their finger, and I guess you can pick your nose with them. I have no idea. But the Bella Fingerling, you can get it on chunktoys.com for $49.99. Let's check eBay. Let's check eBay to see what it is on eBay. What was that? Bella Fingerlings?
Bella.
What are the odds that that is going to be less money or more?
I'm going to say the odds are pretty high it's going to be less money.
I can get a directly from Toys R Us for $14.99.
Okay. Chunk Toys, I hope you go out of business.
Is there something special about the packaging of the Chunk Toys? Is it...
I as far as I can tell,
is there a free hand job involved?
I don't...
Is that an HOD, hand job on delivery? I don't know.
No, they just shit in the box along with your product.
But I guess they're catching the consumer off guard at the very front end, but not updating their listings and hoping that someone doesn't check eBay or Amazon
right
the week or two later.
It's one of those things where I think they're hoping that someone who's not savvy to the internet or maybe checking things is going to remember, oh my God, this item was so popular last year and no one could find it and now I can get it right here and it's going to save me all this hassle, and they're just going to click buy instead of looking when they realize they can just get it directly.
Sony VR launch bundle. Okay?
Okay.
What does that go for in stores?
I think it goes for $450.
Well, maybe you're buying two of them, because on chunktoys.com, it's $999.99.
Fuck these people.
There's no customer reviews yet. Hey, maybe you bought from Chunk Toys, or maybe you have your own experience. Why don't you leave a review of some of these products on chunktoys.com? Well, you know, maybe you got one of those fingerlings, and maybe you got an experience that you can share.
You could let us know. Let Chunk Toys us know.
True reviews only, though.
Yes, only.
Serious reviews only.
Please.
For chunktoys.com.
Please.
Please, serious reviews only on... Like the GG Fingerlings product.
Please do not make any joke reviews about the absolute steal of a deal you got through Chunk Toys.
Let's just check one more. The Lego Star Wars Sandcrawler retired.
Oh, and you can sell your gear? I bet you they give you a great rate.
All right. So they retired, which means it's no longer in print and you can't find it. $499.99, chunktoys.com. But, you know, that's a great deal because it's only brand new sealed for $358 on eBay. So, it's in reverse. It's they're charging more. Oh, I see how it works.
So even the things that do command some sort of premium are still wild.
Oh, and I can get one for $310 brand new sealed. Or $250 brand new. So maybe the Lego market's not even as robust. I just thought this was funny. This came to our attention. It's almost like this was made specially for us to troll us, this website.
Yeah, I feel like it was. So, God, that picture is fucking awful.
So chunktoys.com, you are the scumbag seller of
the week.
Ian, monumental day, the granddaddy of video game consoles. No, not the NES. The Atari VCS, or Video Computer System, became eventually known in the early 80s as the 2600, first came out September 11th, 1977. That makes it 40 years old. We're talking midlife crisis, maybe starting to bald a little bit, hates the ex-wife, buying a Ferrari, trying to overcompensate. Still loves his kids, though, but only sees them every other Tuesday and the weekends.
Spends all of its time in the boat fishing,
yeah.
Drinking a six-pack.
Pondering going back to school, maybe do something else with its life. But seriously, though. What can you say about the VCS? I mean, it has been said. A monumentally important system.
Yes.
It really
establish video games into the pop culture in terms of, you know, when you first... yeah, there was Pong clones all throughout the 70s. I know I was not alive, but in my head, I probably envision how those Pong clones were seen as almost like playing a board game, if that makes sense.
Well,
you know, like it was a cool little thing you did a little bit, but you forgot about it afterwards because there's no personality to those games.
I always kind of said that even about the 2600 in the VCS was, at first, a lot of it was kind of like video board games. A lot of those games didn't really have single player modes. Combat didn't really have a single player mode.
Combat.
Fishing.
Enduro.
And, you know, Fishing Derby, you know, was a game that you generally played with two players. Skydiving, I think you needed two players to play. But then, you know, you kind of watched video games quickly evolve there into, you started to get your single player experiences.
Here are the launch games, right? Air Sea Battle, Basic Math, Blackjack, Combat, Indy 500, Starship, Street Racer, Surround, and Video Olympics. Those are the ones that originally launched with it.
And despite the crudeness of the Atari VCS, and a lot of people thinking a lot of the games, you know, aren't exactly playable today, there are a number of games on that system that I still think are a lot of fun. Yar's Revenge, Pitfall, sure. River Raid, absolutely. A lot of them are Activision games.
I was
going to
say, the Activision games probably got the most out of that system.
Yeah, Activision gets a lot of crap today, but holy shit, did they make a lot of great games for the Atari.
First real third-party publisher,
yep.
You forget.
Yep.
You forget. It's from video game years, watching Amazon Prime. Yeah.
Yeah.
Because they were pissed they weren't getting the credit, the developers. They wouldn't even want to credit them in the game. So they said, fuck this, we're going to do it ourselves.
I remember,
put out our own games.
I remember flipping through the manuals on the for the Atari games. Because my grandparents would have them laying around by the 5200. But when it was an Activision game, you could flip through and it would actually have like a picture of the programmer in the back and like a little letter from them. And they would like, you know, write a little letter and say, thanks for playing the game and talk about it a little bit and stuff like that. And it was really cool to see, you know, that difference. You know, they got their dues and their picture and all this stuff and all that cool sort of shit.
Yeah. And it was the first console that really said, okay. This I was not alive really for, remember. I was a zygote. But total separation at the time between, you know, 70s Pong systems, then you get that Fairchild Channel F that no one had, Ballet Astrocade, Odyssey 2, Atari VCS. You got these weird little games, and also you got these big, huge fucking arcade games. And the Atari was really... They also did it with the Ballet Astrocade a little bit, but really the Atari was like, all right, let's crunch this bad boy down and put it into a little cartridge.
Yeah,
and they did it with Asteroids. And you know what? Asteroids is a damn fucking fine port for a game that old in a system that was that new at the time.
Not all of those games crunched down that well, but Asteroids did.
And that's the reason that the VCS dominated that generation.
Kangaroo did.
Kangaroo.
I was so happy at AVGC they had a Kangaroo cabinet.
And while it wasn't a perfect system, we do that. I never liked the joysticks.
Hate them
because lefties can't use them
because they fucking suck for lefties.
It's like go like cross arm it,
claw around
like you're scratching a kitten's belly. You're holding in your arms.
Yeah.
My cousin used to not let me play because they claimed I broke the joystick. No, they're just selfish, but. This was a great system. It was, undoubtedly so. Was it the most powerful this generation? Could have been the second or maybe even the third. Might have been behind even the Intellivision and the Ballet Astrocade. But it was a personality. The system had a personality. You go back and watch, you can't do that on television. Kids are playing it. When you hear the beeps and blurps of a game from that era, it's going to be an Atari game.
Mm-hmm.
Like especially like when you hear like the sounds of the Pac-Man. That's stuck in your head forever. We're 80 will still recognize that from being an Atari 2600 game.
Wafers, not dots.
Yes. And yes, the Atari 2600 was partially responsible for the video game crash in North America in 1980.
Oh, yeah.
probably to a large extent. They made some stupid fucking decisions stock-wise and investment-wise.
I think that is something that people forget. The Atari 2600 is always held in this high esteem. For good reason. I mean, it was, you know, a massively successful home console to begin with. But very quickly, they made bad decisions. And very quickly, they ran things into the ground.
Because they looked at video games still as toys, where, like, this is just pumping out more G.I. Joe figures.
Right.
Like, it's just a product. There's nothing involved. Just put out 1,000 of them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and other companies thought the same way. We'll just put out whatever it is. It's like whatever the consumer can buy, they'll buy, and that's it. Like, it doesn't matter the quality of what this is. Again, watch the Video Game Crash segment of Video Game Years, because I think we do a pretty good job of explaining.
Cross-promotion.
Yeah, cross-promotion. But, again, though, like, this was actually the first quote-unquote retro game system I was interested in. When I was about, I want to say, 12 or 13, I never had a VCS or 2600. My neighbor did. We played every once in a while. I offered to buy it off of him when I was like 12 years old. I don't think I ever told a story before. Like, he had this system. And the good news is about with the Atari, whoever you knew it, because by 1986, 87, in Toys R Us, the games were $1 or $2 each. So the kids you knew that had it had like 50 or 60 games because they were so fucking cheap.
I mean, I remember seeing...
Before they had an NES, they'd have that.
I remember seeing in like 88, 89...
They still see them.
I remember going into a dollar store with my mom or something and seeing 2600 and 5200 games for a dollar still sealed in their box.
Sealed! So I asked my neighbor, his name was Bill, he was like 2 years older. I said, yeah, can I buy it? Can I buy the system and your games? I had my allowance money. It was so weird because at the time I had an NES, but for some reason there was an appeal to me. Like, this was before my time. This was a simpler time.
I had my NES before I bought my 5200.
Yeah. So it was the same thing, even though my system, you can actually play, but not the 5200.
Fuck.
But I remember the mom turned me down and said, no, we don't want them to sell. I was like, son of a bitch. And I never got a 2600 then, like, during that time period. I was like, kind of like, damn it, I wanted an experience. Like, my favorite game at the time, and still my favorite 2600 game on that system, was Keystone Capers. Love that game.
That's a really fun one.
Love that game. Is that Activision? Thanks, Activision. God damn it, Activision. You
Mega
really...
Mania, Keystone... Mega Mania is great.
Chopper
Paper.
Command. Kaboom.
Hero.
Man, it really wasn't, you could make an argument that it wasn't for Activision. The Atari 2600 would have just fucking shovelware and garbage.
Well, I have actually made that argument before, I think, on the podcast maybe a number of times. When people think Atari... And they buy things like the old flashbacks, or they buy like these Atari game compilations. What you're really buying in terms of quality is Missile Command and Centipede.
And Asteroids.
And Asteroids.
Those are Atari branded games. Yeah. Maybe Combat if you like playing that Goopa game.
Combat's fun with two players. What people assume... I mean,
or maybe Adventure. If you want to go that far.
That's kind of cool. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, what people are really thinking of is either Namco properties like Pac-Man.
Or Miss Pac-Man, which is a decent port.
And they're not often remembering the Atari versions of those, although Miss Pac-Man is pretty decent. Or they're thinking the Activision titles.
Exactly. So here's to 40. Go out, go to Vegas. Try not to do too many hookers and blow Atari, you know. You still have kids you got to take care of.
Your heart's getting weaker.
Your heart's getting weaker. Do some yoga, though. Stay limber.
Stretch.
My advice also to you guys and to Ian to do that. There's another anniversary, Ian.
It is the 25th anniversary of Mario Kart.
We missed it a little bit.
Yep.
But it was 92. It was early September of 92, Super Mario Kart on the Super Nintendo. Do you have any nice memories when it came out? I have some.
Yeah, I do. It may be some of the only fond memories I have of Kevin. But
I hate that Kevin.
Fucking Kevin.
I think all Kevin's morph and split up in different personalities.
Like amoeba.
Yeah, they just multiply out.
But I remember him getting it. And it was one of the first times I think I ever played a split-screen racing game. But it really did kind of, you know, birth a whole new genre. It didn't really feel like racing games. They felt, I mean, they were, obviously, but they felt like action games. And I remember we would sit there and we would just play that game forever, the Super Nintendo one. And it's still one of the ones I have the most fond memories of the Super Nintendo version. Even though it was only two players, we would sit there forever and just hot swap it.
Oh, yeah, you have tournaments.
Yep, and we would pass the controllers around, and we'd sit in the back room, which smelled like crap, and we'd just play the game forever, and it was fantastic. And I remember, you know, at the time, a lot of racing games didn't have a lot of courses, and one of the, it's weird, but one of the things that sticks out to me is playing that game. And, you know, what was it? Four courses per cup. So 16 courses. To me, that was, like, mind-blowing at the time.
Three different speeds.
Yeah. So, you know, there was just a lot of variety. And then, of course, you know, the game just spawned tons of sequels. And honestly, I lost interest. As the sequels went on, I lost interest in the series. But
5-course cup, I think it was.
Okay. Eventually became 4. So that even furthers, though, why I thought, you know, that game was crazy, because there was just so many courses, so many different racing options, the weapons. The battle mode was so much fun.
The battle mode, to me, not that it was revolutionary. I'm trying to think, though, of a game before it that offered something like that on a console. And you're hard-pressed to think of one, I think, that did something like that. I mean, that was like almost like a version of a first-person shooter, you know, but
sure.
You're driving around, a third-person shooter, but you're driving around.
Very smooth scrolling and stuff like
Mode
that.
Mode 7.
Yep. I didn't really fall back in love with the series. I mean, I liked Mario Kart 64 at the time, but I fell off of it. But Mario Kart 8 came back and stole my heart. I do like Mario Kart DS, but really, I mean, now there's all sorts of kart racers.
But let's go back and talk about, besides spawning all the kart racers, the fact that they figured out a way to take a genre that was kind of fringe.
Sure.
Kart racing. Or a third-person racer. It's like, yeah, who cares? There's been a ton of these. On NES, there's 20 racers that, you know, you have a little, whatever, indie car or whatever. Maybe, not Danny Sullivan, but that's more important. But let's take characters people know. And for no fucking reason at all, let's put them in this other game that they will have nothing to do with ever.
Right.
And all of a sudden, it's like a magic formula.
And, I mean, that paved the way for... It kind of opened the universe up. It paved the way for all the Mario sports games, all the spin-off titles.
Smash?
Smash. They also found a way to make racing games accessible for everyone. They got the handling. The controls were down. You know, they were smooth, they were easy to learn. I mean, it's basically the definition of a game that anyone can pick up and play. It really is the pick-up-and-play game. You talk to anyone, people who don't play video games, even people who don't play video games are pretty much likely to say that they've probably played a few rounds of Mario Kart at someone's house.
It's adorable, it uses the license perfectly in terms of the enemies.
The designs of
the
courses.
It's the last time we see DK Jr. in a game for some weird reason. He kind of disappears after that. Or maybe he grows up in the Donkey Kong Country. That's always a controversy there.
Yeah.
What happened to him? Now, is it perfect? No. I don't think the racers are that balanced.
No.
People always went for Koopa first. My fucking cousin always picked Koopa. Son of a bitch. I was stuck with Mario or Luigi. You're a little slippery. But there's like 3 good racers. The rest are trash, basically.
Mm-hmm.
Donkey Kong and Bowser, you ain't going to win a race, probably. With those two, the top, you know, the high top speed, but you're never going to get up to that.
I've seen people crush with Bowser, but yeah, I mean, you usually pick something middle of the road.
Sure, yeah, it's just fun, it's goofy, and I wish I was into the Super Nintendo more. I would have bought that and like would have cherished that. The music is fucking fantastic, and again, it started a great franchise, and the idea of crossing genres up and characters from different genres and throwing them together and mixing them up. And it was probably the best game to do. Like, that's the best series of that. Like, we think of, like, the Crash Bandicoot racers, no one cares, or the Sonic ones. It's like, people want to play Mario Kart.
They're fun, but they always feel like, they always do feel like the copies of, well, of what they are.
Sure. We want to do Q&A time on the CU podcast, Ian?
Yeah.
You want to go to that? We're going to do the Patreon Q&A next time. We'll get to that next time. This is from... at Wolf Limited, did Ian sell much in the way of Neo Geo over the years? Is it too expensive for shop owners to dabble in?
We have. Neo Geo is AES, is what I'm assuming you're probably talking about here.
Probably, yeah. That's a video game console.
Well, I mean, people buy and sell and ask us for MVS cards, too. So if you look at the AES, yes, we have done Neo Geo over the years. More than I can count, but I know it wasn't a ton. It hasn't been a ton. It's not too expensive for shop owners to dabble in because there is a market for it. Even though stuff like this can be expensive, as long as you know it's going to move at some point, as long as you're getting calls for it and there's an interest for it, you know, especially if you, first start working there, it's scary if you're new to it to pay out the money that you need to get it in. But if someone's going to buy it, it's not a big deal. So I don't think any store owners or shop owners are going to be afraid to get Neo Geo stuff in or pay the money to get it in because it's going to sell. What's interesting for about Neo Geo is how it tends to sell out of the store. It's one of these systems that when Neo Geo AES systems sell, anything that's in the store that is Neo Geo AES tends to leave with the system. So if a Neo Geo AES comes in with 15 games, it's leaving with those 15 games. You may have a couple people who already have AESs come in and pick out, you know, one, two, or three of those titles, but basically whatever's on the shelf when someone buys the system is walking out the door.
So they'll drop a grand easily.
Yes. Yeah. Those are serious sales. Those people already have the money to buy the AES. They have the money to clear your wall of all the AES games that you have.
So how often does an AES come through the door at Luna?
These days, not so frequently.
Historically, one or two a year? Like how often?
About two a year until about probably 2 years ago.
And there was none.
And now I haven't seen one in probably 2 years.
And we're talking both U.S. and Japanese ones or mostly U.S.?
Mostly here? U.S., actually.
Mostly U.S.?
Mostly U.S. So, yeah, I mean, Neo Geo does come around.
I don't know what to go there. I mean, yeah, it's a high entry level. So, yeah, like you said, like you're going to have someone that's going to spend the money, but you'll find that buyer quickly because it's hard to find them, but there is a buyer out there for it.
Right. I mean, I think especially every local video game store, every retro video game store, is going to have those three or four regular customers who spend, and they're serious about their collecting and their collection. They've always got, it seems like, this chunk of money set aside for that one thing. And when they come in and they see it, they're back within like 2 days. And they might have some high-end trade-ins, they might not, but that stuff's not going to stick around. So and then on the other side of Neo Geo, we do get a lot of people who want to do, trading of MVS cards. Now we don't put MVS cards on display, but we do keep MVS cards, and that's more of like a personal trading thing.
I was going to say, how can you test them easily?
Right. So that's something that, you know, maybe the owner will do on occasion because he has a nice collection of MVS cards.
Do you worry about fakes if an AES card comes in? Would you be worried nowadays?
These days, yes, we would be.
But even a few years ago?
Even a few years ago, yes. But these days, we would be far more concerned. Even a few years ago, we would check the AES cards as best as we could for, you know, fakes and things like that.
I'm going to keep it. I'm not going to sell it to anyone. I love you guys so much.
What?
Repro games, repro cards.
Oh, yeah.
It's just for my collection.
Yeah, no. No, you're going to die someday, and your kids aren't going
to
care about it.
Why are you saying you want that person to die? What?
I didn't.
At Jester of Roanoke, what is your current level of rye wanting? Course you do, or higher? I think I'm at course you do right now.
Yeah, course you do.
Want some rye? Thanks, Blue Jester. That's funny. At Gutang Clang, that's pretty funny, the stupid Cuphead controversy. I don't care if viewers are good at games as long as they can evaluate a game unbiased. So this is referring to the, I believe it was VentureBeat.
Dean Takahashi.
And they were playing the tutorial of Cuphead. And Cuphead is this really fantastic looking
I mean, 1930s style animated platformer and shooter, like a running gun thing.
Yeah.
It fucking looks awesome. I have no idea if this is going to be a good game or not, but the animation is incredible. This is you don't see animation like this anymore. No, this
and
style.
It's probably going to be pretty goddamn good.
So they did a tutorial, 26-minute gameplay, where this individual was awful.
It shouldn't have been 26 minutes of gameplay.
Like, people were saying, like, they didn't read the tutorial, they didn't know how to do certain game functions of Cuphead. And so, at first, I guess this might have influenced what they were talking about or saying about it, but then they eventually changed it. VentureBeat, they even changed it on YouTube to say, Cuphead Gamescom demos, Gamescom, deemed shameful 26 minutes of gameplay. So then they realized that this was bad. So, this goes back to the question, though. This is what reference do. I don't care if reviewers are good at games as long as they can evaluate a game unbiased. I don't know if you can review a game, though, unbiasedly. You have to be at least competent at a game to review it, though, don't you?
I'm not good at video games, but I have a base level of skill that will allow me to learn the basic controls, get me through tutorials, get me through a few levels at least, before I start getting my ass kicked.
Okay.
And I think someone who's going to review a game at least needs that to be able to have an opinion on it. Because then you at least know how the game feels. And if you start doing bad later on in the game, you can be like, okay, so I'm not good at this game, but I understand why I'm not good at it, and I can see how this feels. Basically, I'm agreeing with you. Yes, you need some basic level of skill. You don't have to be a video game fucking wizard. But yeah, you gotta be able to fucking play a game a little bit to understand it. If you can't get through a tutorial level...
Mm-hmm. You can't comment on it.
You can't comment on it. I'm sorry.
Well, VentureBeat, I guess, I have some fun with it after the original backlash. They actually pinned the comment that said... Is the player really a human being, or is it a self-learning AI neural network? So that's actually pretty fucking funny, learning how to play the game. I think to be a competent game reviewer, not just because of certain NES guidebook, you have to be decent at games, to progress at least a decent into it. I'm not saying you gotta beat the fucking game, but let's just say you get 80% into it before you struggle. You have to know the genre. You'd be familiar with the genre and somewhat a little bit of the history of that genre. To know what came before it a little bit and maybe what a little bit came after it, but definitely what came before to know, okay, are we progressing at all in the genre? Are we retreading? Are we doing some things that are unique to the genre? Or is this the same old, same old? Does this fit into the genre? I think you have to have that knowledge, too.
If you're not good at heavy action running gun games, then you don't put someone, then you don't put that person on review for that.
You don't have someone review a baseball game that hasn't played a baseball game before or know what baseball even is.
I was exactly going to say that. You don't have someone who's your go-to sports game reviewer who doesn't play RPGs and hates anime review the next Final Fantasy game.
Sure. So RPG is probably what I should not review out of everything. Not because I couldn't play an RPG or understand it, but I don't have the patience to know, because I don't play a lot of them, to know what is too much grinding, what is repetitive, when should I be progressing in a game versus standing still. Not the guy for that,
right?
But I'll admit that. I'm good for a flight simulator or a running gun or a platform or a sports or almost anything else, honestly, puzzle. But yeah, something like RPG, I'm not the guy to go to for that, so I'm not. So yeah, I guess there's a little bit of fallout with this originally, but I think at this point, who fucking cares about this? You know, it's not like they did a full-fledged review of this, did they? It was just a demo.
Right.
And initial thoughts or whatever, so who fucking cares? By the time it comes out, this person will not be reviewing this, nor should they. I will say that they probably shouldn't
Well,
be.
Hopefully.
This isn't a Gamergate issue or whatever. Games journalism! No, it's just a guy didn't know how to fucking play a demo and shouldn't be tasked to review it when it comes out. And he actually did a full-length response, not whining about the response, but it was like, dude, I don't fucking need a 1,000-word essay about... The blowback you received of this. Just say you sucked at the game. You shouldn't have put out any opinion about it. Did he even put out an opinion? Just fucking move on. Who cares? All right. And then at SICH, S-I-C-H, our exclusive deals with major sports leagues, the reason why there aren't many sports games released on consoles and PCs.
Well, yeah, absolutely, because, I mean, only the person with the exclusive license can, really make a sports game that's going to sell. Outside of fun and silly sports games like
you know, Mario sports games or something like that. People want to play with the real players. So, yeah, that is why you're really only seeing Maddens right now, or why you're, you know, you're really only seeing, you know, the NBA 2K series. Well, you do have the EA Sports one, but
there's two different NBA.
Yeah, games. The NBA Live, but it's
2K not, and NBA Live.
Right.
The two baseball ones as well?
The major baseball one is the show, which isn't on anything but the PS4. There is RBI. But yes, you don't see a whole lot of sports
there's
games.
There's no major MLB game on Xbox consoles?
Other than RBI, no.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
So yes, this is it. And they did try a few times to make sports games without these licenses to appeal to people who may have preferred a different engine. A great example would be All Pro Football 2K8. 2K made a great series of football games. NFL 2K5 or ESPN NFL 2K5 is considered by a lot of people to be a fantastic football game. It was my favorite football game, and a lot of people loved it. After that title, 2K could no longer make football games anymore because of EA gobbling up the exclusivity. So after, you know, a few years of people, you know, bemoaning the absence of it, 2K decided to go and make a football game called All Pro Football 2K8. And it was staffed with it had Hall of Famers in it.
Okay.
And
But they had to get the license from the individuals.
They had to get the individuals. And, you know, it played similar, you know, it had, you know, basically the same engine. It was good football, but it had none of the teams, it had none of the current rosters.
Could you edit?
I think you could, but, you know, I mean, no one wanted to put that time in.
Like Ken Griffey Baseball, they had the teams, but yeah. no players.
And, you know, it sold like shit, and, you know, they never went and tried to do that again.
Great engine, no appeal because it didn't resemble the actual sport, like
right.
the league that you wanted.
Yeah. And then there was one I didn't play, but people said it was, you know, it was trying something new, unique. It was trying to do camera angles kind of from more of like from the player on the field, you know, type of angle. It was called Backbreaker, and they did two of those, I think. And, you know, that could have been more gameplay related, but also those never took off. And you know, one of the major reasons I'm sure that didn't take off is because it didn't have the real teams and it didn't have the real players.
Which is the one that had a Lawrence Taylor involved with it, where you can take drugs.
That was Blitz. Blitz the League.
That was Blitz?
That was Blitz the League. That was after it lost the NFL license.
After it was NSL, okay.
That did a little bit better just because it was so arcadey.
It was arcadey,
like
NBA Jam.
Yeah, people, you know, would play it for that reason. But yes, I mean, to answer your question simply, yeah, the reason we don't see more sports games released is because of exclusivities.
Is FIFA the only one it has? Oh, yeah, obviously FIFA has the FIFA.
FIFA is the...
Holy shit, yeah.
Well, there is Pro Evolution Soccer,
okay.
which does have the ability to... It does have the licensing for some teams. FIFA has more all around,
and they have the country teams, right? They have the national teams,
but there are some that are only in Pro Evolution Soccer. The soccer ones get weird
because soccer I can't follow it generally because you have the national teams, you have the leagues that are between countries, you have the ones, you know, you have the ones that are just one country, the club teams. I can't fucking keep up. And I like watching the beautiful game every now and then, but I just can't keep up. And they show it more and more on ESPN now. They'll show like the Messi played today and scored like two goals. Like, I know who he is. So that's something. 20 years ago, I wouldn't know who the fuck any soccer players were in Europe. But I just can't keep track of all the different things going on besides the World Cup because I'm not into it. It's like college football. What I say to Frank: too many fucking teams. Can't follow it.
Sure. You
know, it's just too much for me. I can follow, 30 teams at most in a league. But then what? What's the one we're talking about? NHL has NHL every year.
That's the only hockey game.
So that's like... So they have a monopoly. I wonder how legal that is to have a
Well, I believe they've actually discussed that before, and I think they somehow came up with the answer that it's
not a monopoly because it's like licensing. You can do whatever you want with your license. Yeah. It's not like you're making it yourself.
Right.
Well, that's interesting. Well, you think that ever changed in the future? Well, I guess it depends on money.
Yeah.
EA does not
want to give up Madden because 2K gave them a serious run. Just like the NBA Live series is not really considered a competitor to 2K.
Well, sure, it's going to take someone with more money or just as enough to say, all right, say the license is worth $50 million a year, and it might be a lot more than that. For EA to get the exclusive license from the NFL and the Players Association. Maybe someone else, investor, says, all right, I'll give you $90 million. Now what? And it starts a war, and then they say, oh, we'll make money, more money with both, because
from
the NFL stance, who fucking cares? We're getting money from two people like they used to.
It's some sort of bidding war.
Some sort of suicide war. you want to talk about the memory cards in the Switch, or are you done?
I'm done.
You're done? Oh, Ian.
I'm done.
You made it, buddy. You got through a rough time. I know how I did, because I was fucking out of it.
Yeah.
So, anything else going on, Ian, on this CU podcast?
No.
We have a Patreon, Ian, don't we?
Patreon.com/CU podcast.
There you go. That includes our call-in line. We'll get back to that next time. And you can watch the entire video podcast where we say the N-word and stuff like that and get into trouble. No, I'm kidding.
We don't say that.
We don't do that. Well, we say the N-word, but not the actual
N-word. We say N-word.
We say in quotes, N-word. We don't say the N-word.
N-word.
If you want to advertise with the CU Podcast, email CUpodcast@thepunkeffect.com. Again, check out that video game years on Amazon Prime. I will be at 3 conventions in October. Fuck me in the ear. Why am I doing 3 in a row? Retropalooza in Arlington, October 7th, and then the next weekend I will be in Retro World Expo in Connecticut, then with good old Ian Ferguson October 20th in Portland, returning to Portland Retro Gaming Expo. That'll be my, holy shit, 7th or 8th year? Oh, 7th year? That'll be Ian's 3rd.
Yeah.
Already. Wow, 7 years? 11? Yeah, it's like my 7th year. I'm old! And other than that, there'll be a new Ask Frank coming out soon, and then I'll get a new NES Punk video going, and more fun to come, and then a new not so common podcast. Check that out as well. That's the off week. That's like the sorbet for the CU podcast. It's like the palate cleanser of the CU podcast, where it's usually just me and maybe Frank, and then interviewing people from YouTube like Pixel Dan. I just talked to Adam Korlick, has a pretty good retro game channel. We just saw him in New Jersey. Nice guy.
He's nice. I like him.
And we'll see who pops up in the future. Maybe some politics is always fun, because I don't know what I'm talking about. So, for Ian Ferguson.
Goodbye.
I am Pat Contry. CFOs, you guys rule. Thanks for eating sushi with us, and thanks for doing an awesome podcast theme song.
That was a good time.
I ate a lot of sushi. By the way, I ordered the exact amount from my side of the table. You guys dropped the ball. You guys have like 25 rolls left. We had all on my side of the table.
We tried.
Just pass the sushi emperor. All right, guys. We'll see you later.